are Locked On Eagles, your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, what's going on? Louis DiBiase here, co-host of the Locked On Eagles podcast, alongside my other co-host, Gino Camilleri, joining you on this Monday edition of the show. Gino, what's going on, brother? Welcome back, sir, to episode two this week since you've been back.
For sure, man. We're talking more and more football. We actually had some real football on Saturday night, quite the fun game in the FCS world, but we're talking NFL here, and we always have more news coming out, Lou. I mean, Alvin Kamara today all of a sudden is sitting out of practices because he wants a new contract. Riley Reiff, there's a huge dispute going on with him in Minnesota. Maybe he gets released, and maybe the Eagles take a chance on a left tackle who's had some veteran experience and could be a better option than Matt Pryor currently. And there's some injury news we got to talk about, Lou. And being an Eagles podcast, you said it yesterday, you're always coming on talking about a dark cloud. And
segment one, I think the past maybe six or seven shows have all been unfortunate injury news, and that'll continue today. We do have an update on Jalen Reagor. I don't want to say it's unfortunate, like the injury's unfortunate, but we already talked about it yesterday. The news today after the MRI came out and the timetable actually really isn't that bad. But we'll get into Reagor in a second. I do want to mention a couple of the NFL topics that you brought up before that. A lot of running back news today. Alvin Kamara appears to be holding out from the Saints. Leonard Fournette was released by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Gino, the team that nearly played the Eagles and I think would have got blown out of the water in Super Bowl 52 because nobody was stopping that Eagles offense that day. And there's no way Blake Bortles puts up 500 yards like Tom Brady did. But this team that had this insane core, like Fournette was kind of the last guy with that Jalen Ramsey era, Calais Campbell, Malik Jackson, Dante Fowler, Yannick Ngakoue, who gets traded to the Minnesota Vikings the other day. AJ Bouye's gone. Like I said, Jalen Ramsey. Now Leonard Fournette. The Jaguars just completely tearing it down. No, Eagles fans, don't even bother asking. I don't want him in Philadelphia. I don't think Gino does either. But it's just crazy to see a team that nearly played the Eagles in the Super Bowl just a couple years ago already just blowing up the roster. And it makes me appreciate Howie Roseman. It makes me appreciate, even with all the struggles the Eagles have had with injuries the past couple years and, you know, up and down play in the regular season, having to just barely squeak into the postseason, it does make me appreciate this window that has been open for this team for 3 years and counting now, because you see how quickly things can change. Like in Jacksonville, it was all they're doing, right? I blame Doug Marrone. I blame Tom Coughlin. They had all the cap space in the world to make that work. And it just goes to show you never know how quick a window can close if you don't make the right decisions. And it also makes me appreciate Howie using the cap. You know, we talk about how they're so tight up against the cap in 2021, maybe, depending on how the numbers look. But I'd much rather be in that situation paying good players than what Jacksonville is doing, where they're back to square one.
That's the thing, and the one thing you said about just admiring Howie and really understanding how much of an art it is to manage the salary cap. And you have to just give hats off to everybody that's been involved in his team, Andy Widell and Colt and company, since he has taken over that role as well, that they really understand like the proactive versus reactive aspect, which we've talked about so many times. Jacksonville is one of the key teams that has gone into reactive mode, much like the Rams in the NFC, I would say. Like, they're starting to off big names and get rid of contracts because simply they didn't plan 4 or 5 years ahead. They were only looking at year one and two, which the Eagles, we've talked about time and time again, Lou, they're planning for 2025, 2026, 2027. Like, they're planning in the entire regime around Carson Wentz's contract and what is going to happen there. And like you said, Lou, I am very grateful that we have Howie Roseman here. As much as the injuries do stink, you understand that filling in gaps with depth and getting players that are much like your starters in how they play the game is key. Because to me, Jacksonville did a terrible job of that. They should have had guys ready to go, much like Seattle did in that Legion of Boom era, where guys kept going out one by one, but they always seemed to replace those guys. And that's what you're kind of seeing here in Philadelphia. Once Malcolm Jenkins leaves town, you have a whole facet of people that could come in and fill that role between Jalen Mills, Will Parks. You re-sign Rodney McLeod, your cornerback two position. You have four guys there that can compete realistically and play there. Those are just a few examples of the great depth that Howie has put into play and that Doug Peterson, if I'm a head coach, should be thanking his lucky stars he has so much depth here in Philadelphia, because it really has helped him get to the playoffs and win a Super Bowl when it's all said and done. That's what it matters the most in December and January, is who has the most depth and who has guys in place for the year after this and the year after that. Look at Zach Ertz, for example. They went out and drafted Dallas Goedert in the height of Zach Ertz's career. That's the perfect example of how you just have to be proactive in the NFL. Because like you said, you never know when that window is going to close. And sometimes it doesn't close slowly. It slams shut for some teams.
Yeah, and exactly. That's a good point, is having replacements ready. But also, the Eagles have built a culture where they have this core intact. A lot of the main guys up front, right? Lane Johnson, Jason Kelce, Brandon Brooks, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, Carson Wentz, of course, Miles Sanders. It's a stable of guys that want to be here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're going to lose some. That's just the nature of the NFL. You're not going to be able to keep the entire 2017 Eagles Super Bowl roster intact. You've seen all the change in just a couple years already. But at the same time, they've been able to maintain the key parts of that core to keep winning in being a playoff team, whereas Jacksonville, they weren't able to keep anybody. I think a lot of it, too, is that they messed up at quarterback. Blake Bortles didn't turn into what they thought when they took him third overall in 2014, and thus a lot of the stars saw that. Jacksonville, you know, I'm sure Jalen Ramsey looked at that and said, wow, 2017 was probably our ceiling. Don't know if we're going to be able to get back to that point again. So quarterback was a huge reason, but at the same time, like Tom Coughlin, you know, Doug Marrone, they didn't seem like they really believed in that core, that they wanted them around long term. So it was just this domino effect of, okay, Jalen Ramsey wants out, okay, now Yannick wants out, okay, Dante Fowler is gone, Calais Campbell you trade, Leonard Fournette's not happy because everything's being torn down. So it was just this domino effect, and again, like you said, like I said, it really does make you appreciate what the Eagles continue to build moving forward in 2020, and what they continue to build is going to hopefully feature Jalen Reagor, Geno, but that won't be to start the 2020 season, at least. So yesterday we talked on the show, Reagor suffered a shoulder injury. Jeff Mosher was the first with the initial report that after the MRI, it looks like he will not need surgery. He said 3 to 4 weeks, Geno, but Derek Gunn, formerly of NBC Philly, came out today, and I trust Gunn a lot, so I'm going to go with this report.
Absolutely.
It could be closer to 2 weeks, which is huge, because yesterday they were 2 weeks away from the season opener against Washington. Hypothetically, let's say, you know, he's probably in the middle there. I would say you should expect Reagor to come back either week two against the Rams or week three against the Cincinnati Bengals. And that's good news, because I was nervous. Like, losing Reagor for the season or for a long stretch would have been terrible, because he's had such an awesome training camp. And I'm just so excited to see not just one deep threat on this offense, but had to have two. Like, you're gonna have to have safeties covering both sides, like deep cover two now, and that's gonna open up so much for Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, Miles Sanders. So Reagor is gonna be a massive part of this team, and it's good to know that he's not gonna miss a whole lot of time.
A few points to this. Number one, just be thankful that we have drafted multiple replacements for that type of position. In
unlike
also
last
having,
year, right? I mean, when Deshaun was gone,
exactly,
you didn't have a deep threat. Now you got a ton of speed still.
Yeah, we're looking at John Hightower, who reportedly has been making a play every single practice, according to Brandon Lee Gauten of Bleeding Green Nation. And that's what you want to see. You want to see these young guys going out there and competing. I mean, even names that we haven't mentioned a lot in Deontay Burnett have gone out there and had pretty decent camps so far. So it's great to have it in place that you have this young stable that you could take forward. But to me, having Reagor back healthy is going to be the key. Like, if he could play in 2 weeks and he's not 100% healthy, I don't see why sitting him for the first 2 weeks would be a huge problem. Because frankly, Lou, they have a very favorable opening stretch.
Yeah, they do.
To that schedule. I would be more worried about getting him back for week four against San Francisco.
Sure.
And frankly, everybody was on Twitter yesterday. I know I threw the jab at you that the sky was falling. People, Rager's only going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. First off, relax in that aspect. But San Francisco legitimately has zero healthy wide receivers, and Kittle is sitting out of practice. Things can always be a lot worse than they currently are here in Philadelphia. We still have D-Jax. We still have a rejuvenated J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Alshon Jeffrey should be back by October, and you have this young stable of guys that now with this new rule for the practice squad, Lou, that you don't have to put them through waivers, I think you're going to see a lot of bobs and weaves between who you see on the active roster week in and week out. Because, hey, if Rager's out, yeah, you bring up a guy like Deontay Burnett who might have to give you 5 to 10 snaps in place of John Hightower or Quez Watkins. But it opens up the optionality now for this Eagles roster to really become that matchup-based team, like we said, Lou. It's going to be a hell of a task for defensive coordinators to have to plan for so much speed. I really don't know how you do it.
Yeah, and what I'm interested in was when Rager was back, I was still thinking about this, and we had a whole podcast about wide receiver three. Okay, is it going to be J.J. Arcega-Whiteside? And you move Rager at times inside, Deshaun, but also J.J. is like a big slot, Greg Ward in the mix. It's going to be very matchup-based. Without Rager to start, let's say he misses the first 2 weeks, I would expect the starters to be Deshaun Jackson, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and Greg Ward. Mm-hmm. But if John Hightower keeps making these plays, there's going to be times where you want that element that we're talking about where you have a vertical threat on both sides at the X and Z spot. So I could see times where maybe JJ comes off or maybe JJ moves inside and Greg Ward comes off the field and you have Hightower on the outside with Deshaun Jackson. So that's what I expect to have the offense, the receiving depth chart look like the first couple weeks is Deshaun, JJ, and Ward for the majority of snaps in 11 personnel, but then John Hightower definitely involved as well. Then Rager will come back, and you know him and I think Jackson are going to be the two majority the receivers that lead the team in snaps. Alshon Jeffery, you mentioned an update on him. There was another report yesterday, I think it was also from Jeff Mosher, that Jeffery could play. He could be back in September. And you've heard these reports continue to pile on top of each other. Doug Peterson, I think a week ago, said that Alshon was getting close to being back on the field with the team, that he was running well. And it doesn't look like now, basically, even if he's out until October, like Derek Gunn is saying, Gino, I don't think he's going to be placed on the PUP list because then he has to miss at least the first 6 weeks of the season. So let's say Jeffery and Rager, they're still going to be on the 53, right? Because they're only going to miss a couple weeks of the year. So that's two. You've got Deshaun Jackson. You've got Arcega-Whiteside and Greg Ward. That's five guys. You're going to carry John Hightower as well as that six. I still think, though, they might keep seven. And I don't think they want Quez Watkins to they don't want to risk losing Quez because a team like San Fran, I think Kyle Shanahan would be licking his chops to pick up that kind of player. So I think they will be a little shorthanded to start the year because you don't want to place Jeffery or Rager on any injury list. But that's kind of how I think the setup will be to start the year.
Definitely. And you have to look at the other positions on offense, and I can really see them keeping seven wide receivers, because especially if you go three at running back and say you only go two at tight end for the first couple weeks and Noah Tagiai goes to the practice squad,
right?
You could realistically keep seven while keeping Jeffery healthy.
Well, and because I don't think you're going to have to, like, you shouldn't care about losing Holofield, Warren, or Killings. Like, you're gonna be able to at least get two of those
Killings
guys
for the return game, honestly. Right, dude. Yeah. I think he would be a smart player to keep on this roster.
But, like, you know what I mean, though? If you keep three running backs, you're going to be able to keep at least a couple of those guys on the practice squad and call them up if you need be. So I wouldn't waste a roster 100%. Spot. If I can, I'm not losing Quez Watkins to keep, you know, Michael Warren. Or like you said, you know, if even, let's say, Alshon does get placed in the PUP, I'd love to have Deontay Burnett right now as that seventh receiver over a fourth running back.
I totally agree, especially because Michael Warren is just Josh Adams 2.0. Like, you guys, you can find this type of runner literally anywhere. They're a dime a dozen.
Let's hope he's better on third and short, though, for that kind of body.
Totally agree, and I think you made a great point in not wanting to lose a guy like Quez Watkins, because there are so many teams that have injury concerns that these depth positions that you have, you can't afford to allow a guy like Prince Taya to slip through waivers and somebody sign him to their active roster, you know? Like, I just don't want to see any of these guys. Even Casey Tuhill, who's looked good in camp, I don't want to risk losing him either.
Absolutely. Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri joining you. Today's show is sponsored by RockAuto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you're going to need in a traditional chain storefront. You have computers now with access to RockAuto.com at home and in your pocket. It's a family business serving auto part customers online for 20 years. If you go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts, you're going to find them from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or your truck. Make sure you write down Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. All right, Eagles fans, Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you on this Monday edition of the show, episode 2 this week of At Least 5. So again, 4 to 6 episodes a week downloaded into your phone when you subscribe to the podcast on any platform, or you can always listen to them as well on LockedOnEagles.com. Gino, we're talking about the young playmakers, right, and, you know, who's going to step in while Jalen Reagor's out for the first couple weeks of the year. We mentioned J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, you know, John Hightower. Even when Alshon comes back, Reagor's still going to be one of those starters. I still think you're going to see Hightower and J.J. involved, as well as Greg Ward. And so we've really talked about this position a lot on the podcast over the past couple months because it's so crucial. You've seen, you haven't really seen, you talked about it all the time the past couple years where you can't wait until Carson Wentz has a young core of weapons to grow with for not just a couple years, right, with like Alshon and Nelly, but, or DeSean Jackson, or even, you know, they tried it with Mike Wallace and Golden Tate, but to have a Reagor or a Hightower, an Arcega-Whiteside, even a Miles Sanders in the backfield where Wentz is going to grow a chemistry, a, you know, a connection with those guys for maybe 5 to 10 years. And so we talk about those young playmakers and how crucial they are to the future of this team. And although they are not proven, right, you haven't really seen any of these guys do anything on the football field at the NFL level yet, I was thinking about the support they have and why, you know, we're confident in just their talent and their strengths alone. Like, me and you loved John Hightower and Quez Watkins even before the Eagles took one of those guys day 3 of the NFL draft. So you love their skill set, but what I'm really confident in, too, is their support system when we're talking about, like, coaching leadership, the front office, the veterans you have on the team. I mean, you look at let's look at running back Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Corey Clement. They get to learn from guys like Deuce Staley, of course, a former stud running back for the Eagles, an all-around weapon. He himself had 3 years with 50-plus receptions, which is crazy. I didn't even realize that. And they get to learn from Darren Sproles, who's still with the front office. I mean, and all three of them are versatile backs like Sproles that are receiving type of players. They're weapons in the backfield like Sproles was. Sanders, Scott, Clement. And you look at receiver, too. I mean, you bring in a guy like Jason Avant. You have DeSean Jackson on the field. These young kids at running back and receiver have such a strong support system.
I totally agree. I think bringing Jason Avant back was huge. Just somebody that was never the fastest guy, never was the best wide receiver on the field, but was just a polished player to come in there and help out with his team is huge. I think having DeSean there as a strong veteran presence, especially in regard to the play style of these young men that we're talking about, and Jalen Reagor and John Hightower and Quez Watkins, individuals that have that athleticism that come from that DeSean Jackson-esque tree where
right.
Those are guys that you want to get the ball in open space for them, you want to get them down the field, but their route running can be refined a little bit. What do we laud DeSean on now more than ever? And that is his route running. I mean, you look at just a few snaps he had in Philadelphia last year. His route running was just as crisp as I've ever seen it. And to have him there to teach a guy like John Hightower to get him ready for week one, or Quez Watkins to get him ready for week one, I really don't think this team is going to bat an eye and shift away from the offensive mentality that they've had, because they had to do that in the past when they only had one option in Mike Wallace, for example, where you had to kind of bring everything in from an offensive perspective. But no, you're not going to have that anymore, because like you said, and like we've said time and time again, you have this track team of guys out there that can run for this team. And you look, I just pulled out my rookie handbook from Sports Info Solutions just to remind myself, but it just is still eye-popping that John Hightower's average depth of target in college was 17.2 yards.
Crazy.
And Quez Watkins was 11.6. So you're not going to have these quote-unquote short-of-the-sticks throws anymore where you're going to have to throw to a guy like Greg Ward on third down and hopefully he gets a run-after-the-catch type of run. You're going to have guys that beat double coverage downfield and John Hightower, or beat a run-and-catch scenario and make guys miss in the open field and Quez Watkins. It's going to be fun to see how they implement them, and frankly, I'm not as worried about them getting on the field and going out there and producing as I was for JJ last year, because frankly, the way JJ plays is 180 degrees different from the way that DeSean plays, from the way that John Hightower plays, Jalen Reagor, Quez Watkins. JJ had to learn how to use his body and separate. He never had that speed and quickness.
Yeah, exactly. Great point. And what I think is huge, Geno, too, is, again, like DeSean Jackson, he is, to me, the best deep threat of all time. And so when you have that kind of style of player and three young kids and Rager, Hightower, and Watkins, that's going to go such a long way. But again, we talk about Jason Avant and how he can teach those speedsters how to win better, you know, because playing fast and just being fast are two very different things. And to play fast, you're also going to need great technique with your hands, how to win the hand battles at the line of scrimmage against press coverage, route running, footwork, leverage, how to set up and manipulate cornerbacks. And Jason Avant, and he's going to be huge for J.J. Arcega-Whiteside too, because like J.J., Avant wasn't the fastest guy. He wasn't the tallest guy, but he got open, and the dude caught everything. So, and he always made the selfless move. I mean, look at that block in the Miracle at the New Meadowlands. Avant, I just think, is going to be so instrumental for those young guys. So DeSean helps them with the speed aspect. You can see how he tracks the football better than anyone I've ever seen. And then Avant, to have that kind of guy in-house as well that can teach you how to win in other ways, that's going to be instrumental to the speedsters, but I think JJ the most.
Absolutely. That I think we've seen this JJ rejuvenation tour and this redemption tour from a lot of the people inside the building. And there was a report today from John Clark that said exactly what you said at who he thinks should be starting this year. And it is titled, this is what he tweeted out 42 minutes ago, JJ Arcega-Whiteside has looked good at camp. He may start with DeSean Jackson in the season opener. So there's no reason for me to believe that they can't field 3 to 7 capable receivers.
I wonder if JJ will have enough time to, because I don't want Alshon Jeffrey hurt. Like, I like that they still have him in house with the unproven abilities of these receivers. But what I was looking forward to was if he was on the PUP list, JJ, Ward, Hightower, like these guys had 6 weeks to prove that the Eagles don't need Jeffrey anymore. And so what now, I did a whole podcast on it last week. You guys can go check it out, like the impact of Alshon when he comes back, what that does to the depth chart, how many guys are kept, who starts and who plays where. I wonder, because you know Rager and Jackson are going to have massive roles in this offense all year long when and hopefully if healthy. When Alshon comes back, like let's say he comes back in October, I do wonder if JJ looks really stinking good the first couple weeks, and let's say Greg Ward is still consistently getting open in the slot and making big plays on third down and in clutch moments. I wonder, this team has already tried to trade Jeffrey before, I wonder if A, they have enough time to convince the Eagles they don't need Alshon Jeffrey anymore, and B, I wonder if the Eagles would actually do that.
Yeah, I mean, what you want Alshon to think when he comes back is, damn, this team really doesn't need me.
Right.
And either one, you ask for a trade and get him off the field, or two, he comes back and looks good because he wants to get another contract somewhere else. So I think it's a win-win for Philadelphia in a sense because, hey, if JJ doesn't look good and Alshon is rejuvenated, has nearly over a year to recoup and is fully healthy, and he comes back and puts together a stretch of 12 to 13 healthy games, which we've seen him do plenty of times, I wouldn't be shocked at it, and it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world
sure.
for this Eagles team. But I 100% believe that these young guys are going to get every chance they can to go out there and succeed. And every report that we're seeing from camp, they're going out there and doing just that. I mean, there's reports that John Hightower and all these guys are putting on a show against Darius Slay and all these other cornerbacks, and I want to see it, man. Especially when you're going against a team like Washington or Cincinnati, I'm going to feel comfortable with those guys out there because they don't have the most talented rosters. But you want to see what you have for that stretch when you're playing Seattle and New Orleans and Green Bay in weeks 10 through 16.
Right. Absolutely. I it's going to be an interesting situation. I do still think that Arcega-Whiteside and Hightower and Ward, they have enough time. If they look really, again, if they come in and like Arcega-Whiteside lights up Washington and Hightower is making a deep play or two against LA, and again, Greg Ward is so consistent, and you know you've got Rager coming back in a week or two. Yeah, I could see them when Alshon gets healthy trying to see if they can find a suitor for him. But I'm with you. It's a good win-win situation where no matter what, it looks like you have way more options at this position than you did last year, where, again, you had to look like Iowa's offense because you couldn't have more than one receiver on the field at the same time.
Any year. I mean, realistically, yeah. Lou, when is Carson ever had this good of a receiving core.
He really hasn't. And so, I mean, last year it looked like he was... Yeah, right. Yeah, because last year on paper before the season, you thought, okay, Jeffrey Aguilar Jackson's going to be pretty strong, or even Mike Wallace in 2018. But yeah, this year it's deeper, and I just think it's more exciting with the style of receiver they have. Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri joining you on this Monday edition of Locked On Eagles. We'll wrap up the show in segment three coming up next. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, Eagles fans across the globe, thanks so much for tuning in to LOE today. We are talking about the receiver position, but, you know, Gino, we also got into running back, too. And, again, to have Darren Sproles and Deuce Staley helping out Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Corey Clement, versatile weapons in the backfield that are really good receiving backs, I mean, that's huge. Again, Sproles is one of the best receiving running backs to ever do it. But then Deuce Staley, like, you look at how much Miles Sanders improved on the ground last year in the second half of the season, how much more confident he was, how much more decisive he was, not just in the first level, like when to cut, bounce things to the outside, when to just stick your foot in the ground and go through the A gap or B gap, but like on the second and third level too, when to just run and use your speed, or when to try to be Shady McCoy and try to juke guys out. And I think Staley was instrumental to Sanders' success, and with a young trio in the backfield, you got a combo like Sproles and Staley. I mean, these weapons are set up really well, and not just them, but like, again, the coaching staff of, you know, you look at up front on the offensive line, Jeff Stoutland, and, you know, you mentioned before the show, Connor Barwin being still with this organization, helping out the defensive ends, and Brent Celek still in house. I mean, the Eagles have done a really good job of keeping a lot of their big time players over the years now helping out this young core.
Totally. I think keeping those guys around not only brings this kind of understanding that you have more guys in-house that get the system, but also from a scouting perspective, it was huge, because I know I mentioned it a couple times when I was down in Mobile, Connor Barwin and Brent Celek were there live for the Eagles looking at players and really putting their hand into this organization. And Casey Tuhill, apparently he was a Connor Barwin pick, which is huge, because one, yeah, it goes to the depth of how much this organization trusts individuals to that degree. I mean, Connor Barwin, they've always held in high light, and guys like Darren Sproles and Jason Avant, like, these have always been players that have been respected. Brent Celek by the organization, and I think that's huge, because in my professional career, I kind of have been with some companies that weren't so loyal, so I love when organizations and companies and teams can keep players around like that, because I think it's huge for morale, because, hey man, if, like, Josh McCown, he was only here for a year, but people wanted to get him in-house because they understood how...
I would have been cool with him as our offensive coordinator.
Facts. I still think he has a chance to come back in when he's all said and done and he's retired, finally puts it away. But that's huge to me, Lou, because especially in this day and age right now where we only have less than 2 weeks before the season, but they're the only team in the NFC East with continuity, having guys there that understand Doug Peterson's offense in Darren Sproles and Jason Avant, because he was there in Kansas City with Doug, having those guys in place is huge, just to get rookies up to pace on the playbook, getting them lined up correctly. That's going to be huge in that understanding, because you can't look at Dallas, you can't look at the Giants right now, and you can't look at Washington and say any of these guys have any understanding of what is going on in Joe Judge or Ron Rivera or Mike McCarthy's system that have been there in the past. I mean, everybody knows how Doug plays. He comes from the Andy Reid system. It's a very, once you get it, I feel like it's a very easy system to understand. And I think that's why Carson Wentz is a perfect quarterback for it, and Patrick Mahomes is a perfect quarterback for it in Kansas City. And I think everybody that they brought in-house understands, quote-unquote, it when it comes to the Eagles, not just from a play perspective, not just from a skill point perspective, but from a culture perspective.
Yeah, really well said. And it's kind of fun, Gino, when you think about it. They're kind of forming like that old trio, or the four guys that you really ran with at receiver and running back in the early 2010s, right? It was DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, Jason Avant, LeSean McCoy. And now It's kind of fun. Like, you see maybe down the road, like, Rager is your new Deshaun, John Hightower could be your new Macklin, Sanders is your new McCoy, and one of our listeners said on Twitter yesterday, they're like, don't forget Greg Ward's maybe your new Jason Avant, or maybe it's JJ. Right. Maybe it's JJ. So it is kind of fun to see the similarities of, like, that old fun offense that we grew up loving, kind of making a comeback in the form of these new players. And even this year, you kind of got that Macklin, Jackson, McCoy trio again in the form of Jackson, Rager, and Sanders. So it's exciting because that's really not how this offense has been built really since Deshaun and Macklin got cut or let go in 2013 and 2014. So it's been a long time, and it's fun to see that that kind of style of offense is going to hit the field, man, in less than 2 weeks.
I totally agree. I just had this thought in my head that if Deuce Staley ever does move on and gets a head coaching job or becomes the Eagles assistant head coach, like, fully, or offensive coordinator, I could see LeSean McCoy, once he retires, coming back and being the running backs coach.
And Brandon Graham said the other day that when he hangs it up, too, he'd love to stick within the organization like all these other guys have, too. It, again, you know, we talked about the Jaguars and how that organization, that core broke up. It's so cool to see the Eagles, like, these guys, even after they retire, they still want to be a part of this team and this culture.
Totally. And it goes to just show you, and I think if you haven't watched it yet, please, 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 please go watch what Jeffrey Lurie said yesterday in his press conference. It goes to show that the Philadelphia Eagles are about leadership above all.
It starts from the top, man. It starts from the top.
Starts from the very top up, and you hear how people outside of Philadelphia talk about it. It's one of the most respected and well-run organizations for a reason because, I mean, right here in Buffalo, Lou, we have the, I don't know if it's the advantage or the disadvantage of being so close to multiple Terry Pegula / Kim Pegula run organizations that just have had the wheels fall off for the past decade or so. I tweeted it today, and I don't like to get into politics on Twitter, but I don't care if Jeffrey Lurie ran for the mayor or if he ran for like to be on a board somewhere. I would vote for that guy in any type of election he is in because he truly inspires leadership and change, whether it's from his autism organization that he runs and brings in all the players for that. It's with his son. It really is. It holds true to his heart, or just allowing the players to be themselves and putting that message out there that, yeah, these guys are football players, but above else, they're people. And you see why guys want to come back. Hell, man, if I ever got a chance in the NFL, regardless of my fandom, I would want to work for a team like that, that doesn't see too much turnover, that sees guys stay within the organization, that has an owner that speaks up on topics outside of the sport, and has a head coach that has been so widely regarded in two different organizations. Man, that just screams to why so many veterans and players want to come play in Philadelphia.
Well said, bro. I think that's the perfect way to wrap up today's edition of Locked On Eagles. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into this Monday edition of the podcast, episode 2 this week. Going to do at least 3 more, so make sure you subscribe on any podcast platform or head over to LockedOnEagles.com. You can listen to every show there as well. And me and Gino are always talking birds after the show. You can follow us on Twitter. The show page is at Locked On Birds. I'm on Twitter at DiBiaseLOE, and Gino is at Gino_LOE. For Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.